Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another brand new episode of The Casual Criminalist. I, as always, am your host. Welcome to the show. What happens is one of my writers, in this case Arnaldo, has written me a script, The Spectacular Stockholm Helicopter Heist. I've never read it before. That's the format here. It's a cold read. We're going to go through it together. We're going to explore. We're going to learn. And afterwards, a wonderful video editor, Jen, is going to, do the video editing thing. Or if you're listening to this as a podcast, the audio. Yes, that's how it works. Should we jump in? Or before we do, if you're enjoying this podcast, why not review it? I see those reviews coming in on Spotify. We've got like 5,000 of them now, with a 5-star average rating, which, might I say it, quite impressive. Blow your own horn, why don't you, Simon? Yes! But leave a review. It'll probably drop now, because people will be like, Simon's a bit of a dick, isn't he? He loves himself a bit too much. It doesn't matter. Let's just get into the show, shall we? September 23rd, 2009. It is yet to dawn over the vast Berga district of Stockholm, but the G4S cash depot is already coming to life. This facility, owned by the huge security company, is one of the main hubs in Sweden for the collection and redistribution of cash to banks, ATMs, and small employers. And today is payday. Isn't there there's that bank robbing game called Payday, which I've never played, but I often see it in Steam and I'm like, I bet I'd enjoy the shit out of that. There's something so exciting. I love bank robbery movies for some reason. It's like, yeah, go on. F*** the man. Take that money. But obviously bank robbery's wrong. G4S, by the way, the security company. I think they're one of the largest. Like, they have as many people on their staff as, like, militaries. Like, some militaries. I don't think it's true, but I think that they have more security staff than, like, the British military or something. It's absolutely wild. You don't want G4S to do a cute coup. And then it's like, suddenly it's like, oh no, G4S now run the country. It's a dictatorship. Uh-oh. Allegedly, I'm not saying that G4S is planning that. In fact, they're almost certainly not. They're probably like, look how much money we're making. Sweet. The 6-story building topped by a pyramid-shaped skylight may appear to the malicious mind as a layer cake stuffed with a delicious filling. 1 billion Swedish krona in cash. Roughly $150 million. Around 5 a.m., night shift team leader Oscar Lindgren walks into the armored room where most of the cash is being held. Lindgren and his staff are about to clock out. Nothing to report so far. All is fine. All is quiet. Well, not so quiet. The air is filled by the sounds of hundreds of thousands of banknotes rattling through the counting machines. It's an obstinate, dull, repeating noise. Some may say that this is the drumbeat that makes the world spin. That's nicely put. Money makes the world go round, essentially. Today, Lindgren notices something else. It's like a second drummer has joined the band, one who doesn't care for keeping the same time signature as the steady march of the rattling notes. Another loud vibration is filling the room. Something is shaking. But what exactly? Let me guess. It's a helicopter. It's gonna smash through that glass seat. This sounds like a movie. This better be made into a movie someday. Lindgren asks his colleagues to shut off the counting machines, and then he realizes the walls of the buildings themselves are trembling. Another thrumming sound joins the ensemble, jamming Lindgren's ears with yet more confusion. The drilling noise comes from above this time, and it's not hard to discern what it is. It's the rotor of a helicopter! Ugh, big brain flying above the G4S building, very low. Dangerously low. Lindgren's team often joked about robbers attacking from above, smashing through the pyramid skylight. It does, I mean, it's like, yeah, you put a giant glass thing in the top of your building, of your super secure building. That's exactly how people would rob it. Ha 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 ha! Hilarious. Until it happens. Well, one of them quips, it seems the day has finally arrived! Oscar Lindgren leaves the cash room to investigate the source of the noise. I'll tell you what it is, Oscar. It's a big helicopter, and it's about to do exactly what you think it's going to do. He reaches the building's internal courtyard and looks up. Beyond the skylight, he can see the shadowy silhouette of a large craft. A helicopter is hovering above the roof of the building. He then notices one of the glass panes of the pyramid has been smashed in, and two ladders have been lowered through the opening. It's not bulletproof glass. It's just glass that can be smashed with a ladder. Come on, G4S, you could do better than this. You're like the biggest security company ever. More worryingly, one, two, three men dressed in black and wearing motorbike helmets have descended into the courtyard. As he sprints back into the cash room, he shouts, "It's for real, they are here." It seems that that day has finally arrived. On the 23rd of September 2009, a well-organized team of professional robbers used a stolen helicopter to raid a G4S cash deposit in the Västberga district of Stockholm, Sweden's capital. Eventually, everything about this heist was spectacular. The planning, the execution, the getaway, and the loot. 39 million kroner, or 8.7 million US dollars in 2020 money. I'll tell you what, that's a lot of cash. Even in $100 bills, that's a lot of cash. Like, $1 million, surprisingly, fits in a shopping bag, like a decent, it fills a shopping bag with $100 bills. So that's a couple of suitcases just full of cash in dollars. And maybe it could be smaller bills in kroner, I don't know. Several accounts of the robbery, especially those written in 2009 and 2010, highlight how the Swedish police had been tipped off by the Serbian Foreign Ministry weeks in advance, and it's hinted that the Swedish police had failed to act upon the tip or had downright ignored it. This happens all the time. Wasn't that famous, like, terrorist attack in Belgium? And it's like, yeah, it turns out the police had been told about that. Just hadn't done it. So, come on! Really? Without spoiling it too much in advance, let me tell you the truth. Is far more complex. Sure, we love a good heist, especially non-violent ones, and we may... I love how people love these. It's like, I started as I love bank robbing movies, yeah, f*** the man. And it's also like, but I don't rob banks, I keep my money in banks, and I'll be upset if someone robbed my money. But it's insured. So you're like, okay, but then you're like, well, the insurance company's gonna raise the bank's premiums, and then the bank's gonna give me less interest on my money. And you're all like, yeah, but it's entertaining, isn't it? And we even begrudgingly admire the brains, brawns, and brass appendages of those who carry it out. But we should not overlook the ingenuity and determination of police officers and prosecutors who go after these real-life Ocean's Elevens. So, I hope today's story will give the Swedish police the right amount of credit that they deserve. Now, before we get into the description of this hellish helicopter heist, a word of warning for Simon and our audience. Apparently, Swedes like their robberies to be like their flat-pack furniture. In other words, plenty of small moving parts coordinated by a set of instructions which may leave many dads shouting in angered confusion while the kids learn plenty of new words which mum does not approve of. That's my experience, at least. Oh my god, Arnaldo. Speaking exactly the words that I would say. It's like, where's the bloody final screw, IKEA? And then every single time, I'm like, oh, here it is. Now, like, I've done furniture from, like, other companies, you know, where it's not IKEA, and it arrives, and it's like the instructions are half in Chinese, and you're like, what's going on? And then there are missing screws, and it drives me absolutely potty. And I'm like, so used to doing IKEA furniture, that you're like, of course there's no missing screws. Why would there be missing screws? And then you're like, oh no, this isn't like IKEA. They can be missing. And it's very disheartening. Whereas with IKEA, you know you're the one being an idiot. Which is even more frustrating, isn't it? Because you're like, look at my stupid brain's limitations. So, dear Simon, turn the page for a sheet of instructions as a reference. Should you feel lost at any point, this should facilitate you in effortlessly reconstructing the assemblage of today's chronicle of misappropriation. Please do not read out loud before the actual story. Oh, sorry. Okay. Okay, so... Is this... I'm sure there's copyright on this image, but let's just show it on the screen quickly. And it's... I know Arnaldo said not to show this, but it's too entertaining. It's like a fake robbery thing from Sweden by IKEA, and it's like a helicopter being put together like an IKEA diagram. That'd be cool. It would definitely be one where it's got, you know, that IKEA thing where it's like, help, have a friend help you. And I always end up assembling those by myself. Because f*** you, IKEA. Okay, so Arnaldo has given me a list of characters. Oh my god, there's a lot of them. He's also given me a list of locations. Tell you what, let's put these in the description below. Let's put these in the description below so people can have a look down on YouTube and if they just get a little bit lost, because I'll be looking back at these, no doubt, or maybe I'll just help you along. Look, let's just get into the story. I'm sorry if I'm sounding a little nasal today. I have a cold, but I'm about to go on a week's holiday. So, I'm at work, and I'm making criminal lists, so you have something to watch while I'm away. That's a lie. There's already, like, 10 episodes recorded, but I don't like getting too far behind. Fascinating story, Simon. Thank you. Looters from the skies. The main action of the helicopter heist took place at around 5:20 a.m. on the 23rd of September 2009, but some members of the gang have been at work since much earlier. Good. I like to hear this, because normally it's like, yeah, he decided to do a robbery. So he drove his own car with his own gun to the bank, and then he robbed the bank and he immediately got caught. You know, because, how's it go? Poor planning leads to piss poor performance, is what my history teacher used to say, and he's bang on. Especially about robberies. At approximately 4:30, a robber disguised in a balaclava broke into a police helicopter depot located in Mittinge, 40 kilometers north of Stockholm. The man dropped two packages, one in front of the hangar housing the choppers, the other close to the fuel tanks. If we could zoom into those packages, we'd notice a red LED blinking with sinister promise. Uh-oh, someone's doing some... This already sounds like it's getting very violent. An explosive device? The man left the hangar undisturbed and walked into the nearby woods. He then set fire to his gloves, his balaclava, his burglar tools, and he left the scene. So far, this is well planned, well executed. Burning the evidence is always recommended. What was it, that rule that I think is like, if the punishment for the crime that you've committed is worse than the punishment for destroying evidence, you should absolutely be destroying that evidence. So he's burning the gloves in the woods. Smart criminal. Around the same time, too, I have no idea if that's how it works. If you destroy evidence that is like evidence of a murder, is that more serious than destroying evidence of like you pirating the latest James Bond movie? Like deleting the movie off your computer afterwards? That feels like less of a crime. It's probably not a crime, is it? It's probably like a copyright infringement, which is a civil offense, so they can sue you. Is that a crime? Those warnings in the cinema are always like, the FBI will come after you. Not that I've... Now people definitely know that I've allegedly pirated stuff in the past, because why would I see the FBI warning? Well, sometimes you get it on, like, DVDs and stuff for some reason. Like, back in the day, you'd just be watching a legit DVD and it would be like, FBI warns about this, and it's like, FBI? What, are you, like, Scotland Yard or some shit? Oh my god, sorry for the tangent. Let's get back to it. I don't even remember what we're talking about. Oh yeah, burning evidence. Okay. Around the same time, two men were breaking into another helicopter hangar, this time a civilian one, located in Nortalja. Look, I'm just not going to try with the Swedish pronunciations because it interrupts the flow and I don't want to look them up because I just like reading. Look, this, I know it feels incredibly lazy to you, dear listener, but I get to do this job where I just get to read these things and it's really nice. I just get to do, like, sit down, turn on the camera, and read these wonderful things that I've had written for me. And it's a bit like reading a book, which is nice. And you know what you do when you read a book? You don't look up pronunciations of, like, random towns you've never heard of. And I don't like interrupting my enjoyment to make a better video. So I just have to live with it. All right. Anyway, this town, which I'm getting the pronunciation of it wrong, is 160 kilometers north of Stockholm. The robbers forced their way into a red and white Bell 206 Jet Ranger chopper, switched on the engine, and took off, heading south. About half an hour later, in eastern Stockholm, another much lesser incident was taking place. A white Toyota had collided with a black Audi. A very mild collision with no injuries and very little damage involved. The driver of the Toyota took some photos of the insurance claim and then shook hands with the driver of the Audi. The latter signed the insurance papers as Alexander Eriksson, a TV producer, cameraman, and amateur helicopter pilot. He had a history of cocaine and amphetamine use, an addiction in which he may have relapsed to after a stressful assignment in Malaysia. This guy's life sounds fascinating. He's a TV producer, cameraman, amateur helicopter pilot, and he does cocaine and has to travel to Malaysia. Mate, what is your life? But let's put a pin on Mr. Eriksson for the moment, as we'll come across his name later. Let's now focus our gaze on the main stage of the action, the G4S building in Varsberga. At approximately 5:20 a.m, the Bell 206 chopper landed gently on the roof of the cash depot. Three masked men climbed out. One of them smashed in the pyramid skylight with a sledgehammer, and the other two immediately swooped in, lowering two long ladders through the breach. That's when our friend Oscar Lindgren took notice of the raid taking place. Once he rushed back into the armored cash room, he instructed his team to throw as much cash as they could down the chutes leading to a more secure vault. Other bundles of notes had already been secured inside padlocked metal cages. He then gathered the stuff. You know who else is on this heist? Lockpicky Lois, like, binding on one. I love this channel lately. I've watched, like, so many of his back videos. It's this, it's an amazing channel where a dude just picks locks and is like, it's super chill. And it's like, no lock can stop him. Like, I feel like if he came to visit me, it would be quicker for him to just, he wouldn't even ring the bell. He'd just be like, binding on one. And then he'd come down and be like, binding. And then he'd be like, hi. He goes to work and he's just like, I don't even carry keys. I just carry my daily carry thing. Amazing. The shit I watch on YouTube is so bizarre. Like, really is. He then gathered the staff in a corner of the room and asked them to wait for help. In the meanwhile, the Reed robbers had blown up a bulletproof window with a small explosive device and entered the offices. They broke open a door and found themselves just outside the cash room. A reinforced steel door was the only defense between them and the loot. Inside the room, panic was spreading like wildfire. In the G4S alarm center located somewhere in Stockholm, a guard on duty received an urgent phone call from Lindgren. The team lead was worried about his panicked co-workers. The robbers were just outside the steel door. Should they wait, or should they make a sortie, risking a confrontation with the robbers? No! It's just money! F***ing surrender! Like, even... If I was in this situation, if I was racing this cash room, I'd wave at them through the window, put the hands interlocked behind the back of my head like you see in the movies and get down on my knees. I'd just be like, I am surrendering. You're not here to murder me. You're not, like, and you're wearing masks. So we're all good. I've not seen your face. I'm even going to close my eyes. Nothing is happening. Look, blah, 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 blah. I can't even hear you. I don't even hear your voice. Just take the money and leave. Obviously, I'd be saying this in Swedish. I assume that if I worked for G4S in Sweden, I would speak Swedish. And, yeah, I'd just be like, take the money. It's just money. Am I going to get fired? Probably. Do I give a sh-? No. I'm alive. He'd be like, Simon's such a coward. It's just money. And more importantly, it's just someone else's money. Before the guard could provide advice, an explosion thundered at the other side of the line and Lindgren's phone went dead. By now, G4S security guards had already alerted the police, who immediately sent orders to their own pilots and Matinge to take off. The pilots on duty rushed to get to the chopper, as my Austrian namesake would put it. Oh, note, this is a reference to Arnold Schwarzenegger's character in Predator. Wait, was Arnold Schwarzenegger's character in Predator called Arnaldo? It's been a long time since I've seen Predator. But, wow, okay, there you go. But the cops found a small surprise. Wait, is Arnaldo... Wait, I see. Arnaldo's Italian. Is Arnaldo the Italian version of Arnold? That would kind of make sense. That makes more sense than his character in Predator being Arnaldo. Okay, great. Mystery solved. Carrying on.
Now, I know you've never heard of this man, but his actual name, believe it or not, is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But the cops found a small surprise, a mysterious box with a blinking light deposited just next to their hangars. Oh, this is genius. It's not even a bomb. It's just a blinking light. And they're going to be like, oh, God, we can't get to our choppers because that could be a bomb. And we've got to call the bomb squad. So it's just to delay them. Ah, genius. And more worryingly, there was a box by the supply tank containing 6,000 gallons of fuel. Some reports of the event state that the officers at Matinge were stumped by a mysterious package with the word bomb scrawled on it. Even if you wrote, hey guys, this might be a bomb, look at that flashing LED, they'd still have to call it in because they'd be like, well, and then they open it up and it's just like nothing. It's just, you know, a box filled with like paper, and they'd still have to call it in because better safe than sorry. Crazy. Which sounds like something Wile E. Coyote would buy from the Acme Corporation. The reality was less farcical and far more worrying. Logically, the personnel on duty preferred to call in the bomb disposal squad before taking any risks. With the police helicopters grounded, the chopper raiders could get on with their job. At 5:38 a.m., a reinforced door to the cash room collapsed after a third explosive charge had gone off. The three robbers strutted in, Kalashnikovs and handguns at the ready. Luckily, Lindgren and his staff had already vacated the room by using another exit. There was another exit? Well, obviously I wouldn't surrender then. I'll just go through that exit and try to leave. The three masked raiders were free to unleash their power tools, circular saws, with which they broke into the metal cages containing the cash. Outside the building, the first police patrols were arriving on the scene, or rather they were trying to, as their cars almost drove into a perimeter of chains strung across the streets and lined with caltrops. Wow, how would you describe it? It's like a thing you throw on the ground that punctures tires with little pins, and it will always be one nail is pointing upwards, you know? As a non-native English speaker, I had to check what a caltrop was. Okay. All right, Simon, sometimes you should read these ahead. It's basically a four-spiked metal nail designed to puncture car tires. There you go. Caltrops are to cars what Lego bricks are to barefoot dads of space, basically. Yeah, oh my god. We don't have Lego yet for my kids. We have Duplo, which is like big version of Lego. And sometimes I'll tread on one of those bastards. And I'm like, this is just the beginning. It's going to get so much worse with Lego. And when a dad finds a perimeter of colourful bricks, he knows better than to advance. The first police units on site were of the same persuasion. Here they had a gang who had assaulted a cash depot with a helicopter who had detonated explosives and had prevented the arrival of police forces by cordoning off the area with chains. Don't police cars have run flat tyres? Even cars these days have run flat tyres. I don't know if I have run flat tyres. I've never got a puncture. But then if you get a puncture, they're like, you have to go to the... I don't think I do. But they're fairly common on cars. You can get them. Clearly, they were facing some pretty hardcore professionals. Better way for their own hardcore SWAT teams. And they did so. Cops on the scene set up a command center at a nearby gas station where they were soon joined by one Johan Peterson. A former military captain, Peterson was the chief of security for the G4S deposit. He fired up his laptop and logged into the CCTV feed, revealing the images of three commando-like robbers sawing their way into piles of cash. Peterson noticed two very interesting details. First, there were no bombs placed by the entrance, which could allow for a tactical team to burst in. Second, the robbers were getting tired of hoarding bundles of banknotes. You know, it's a hard job where you're like, my arms are tired, I can't lift any more money. You know you're doing a good robbery when your arms are tired. When the cash you're stealing becomes so much that you couldn't be asked with doing some extra lifting, it's a clear signal that you should call it quits. Shortly after, the motivation though is to be like, each armful is worth like hundreds of thousands of pounds. Like, come on. Ah, I should go to the gym. Shortly after 5:40 a.m., in fact, the gang dragged their sacks full of kronas to the inner courtyard and started climbing up the ladders. The helicopter, which had been hovering until then, descended upon the roof. The gang hauled sack after sack of booty up the ladders and into the chopper. A tiresome endeavor, surely, so much so that one of them slipped onto the bottom rung, leaving a trace of blood. Oh, no! No! No, it's all going wrong. This is critically important. Finally, the three raiders climbed onto their Bell 206, slid the doors shut, and took off into the Stockholm dawn. It was by now time for the gang to execute their well-prepared getaway. That little bit of blood behind, left behind, feels like a CSI episode where Greg's gonna be like, ch-ch, it's blood, Gil. The helicopter flew to the southwest of Stockholm, making a landing in Norsberg. Part of the heist squad climbed out before the Bell lifted off again. The chopper made a second landing by the Lake Mälaren west of Stockholm. Here, other team members disembarked, boarded some pre-prepared speedboats, and thundered off into the watery horizon. This is a movie. I love it. But the pilot still hadn't finished his shift. He took off once again before touching down in a forest north of Stockholm. He's going to burn that helicopter, surely. The pilot turned off the rotors, locked the craft, and walked towards the nearest town, Tabby. On the ground, he had dropped some plastic zip ties and a handheld GPS unit. Why? Just throw that into the helicopter and set that bitch on fire. Come on! At about 7 p.m, a bearded man in a dark suit walked into Tabby's McDonald's. He did not order an Egg McMuffin or whatever was on the menu at the time. He simply asked if he could call a cab to be driven to central Stockholm. It's 2009, mate. What are you doing? Just use a... What? That's weird. Until then, the pilot and his Bell 206 had flown undisturbed as the police pilots in Medinge were waiting for their bomb disposal team. When they arrived, they blasted the alleged bombs with a water cannon. Really? That's the solution? I feel like that would set them off. And then it'd be like, there's all those gallons of jet fuel. Upon inspection, the police realized they'd been fooled, baffled, and swindled. Yes, bamboozled. The supposed bombs were just empty plastic boxes fitted with red LEDs. Yeah, I mean, exactly what we expected, right? But also, you can't take the risk. Enter the Popo. Time for a recap now. An audacious gang of... I'm actually not struggling to follow this. I'm not paying too much attention to the town names and and hopefully that won't become super important later on. But I'm following so far. But we'll have a recap anyway for the dim-witted among us. An audacious gang of robbers are taken out by surprise one of the largest security companies in the world and the Swedish police, performing a spectacular raid which had clearly been well planned and well rehearsed. They'd stolen a helicopter, they had pinned the police's own choppers on the ground with decoy bombs, and they'd stumped the arrival of patrol cars with caltrop chains. They clearly knew by heart the layout of the G4S officers and had meticulously prepared their escape route with those speedboats. They'd gotten away with 39 million kroner, but the loot could have amounted up to 150 million if it weren't for Lindgren's order to drop most of the money down the chute. I hope he got a raise, by the way. I don't think he did. He's just doing his job. But were the police truly and thoroughly baffled? Well, as it turned out, the cops were not so clueless. Around 7 a.m, news of the heist was already spreading while the police were actively collecting clues on the event. Quite early on, they found out that the helicopter used in the heist was a Bell 206 stolen in North Alger. Yeah, I mean, how many helicopters are stolen every day in flying distance by helicopter of that G4S depot? It's not going to be that many. I don't think helicopter theft is particularly prevalent. Because it's like, you steal a helicopter, then what do you do with it? You got to know how to fly a helicopter. You got to, is there like a black market for fencing helicopters? It's not like you steal a car, and I don't know what, they take it to a chop shop, they chop it up into pieces and sell the pieces, or they ship it abroad to be sold in some dodgy country somewhere. Like, that's how car theft works. With helicopters, it's got to be a bit different. The market for, like, you know, because if you've got a helicopter, the cost of running a helicopter is very high. So, like, it doesn't seem like that would be common. Do you remember Mr. Alex Erickson, the TV producer, who had also been in a collision with the Toyota? Yeah, the dude who went to Malaysia and did cocaine. Early in the morning, he received a phone call from a reporter he had worked with in the past. The reporter seemed to remember that Alex owned a chopper in Nordalgia. Could it be that the gang had stolen his helicopter? Oh, wait. Okay, this could be interesting. I get the feeling this guy's involved somehow for some reason. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got his backstory about his cocaine in Malaysia. Do you think it's his helicopter? Do you think he's the pilot? Do you think he's the guy? And they're going to pretend that his helicopter was stolen? Alex replied that no, it could not be his. His craft was undergoing repairs and sorry, but he was driving to a business meeting, so he couldn't talk right now. Again, let's stick another pin on Erickson and let's take a look at what the police had found out. Their forensics team had actually gathered a fair amount of evidence. They had the chains and the cow drops, the blood spilt on the ladder. Add to that potential DNA traces on the sledgehammer and on the zip ties used to secure the ladders. Guys, you need to have burned all this stuff. Why aren't you burning stuff? You know what's excellent at getting rid of DNA? Fire, mate. Come on. It should have all gone back in the helicopter with you. You should have pulled those ladders up and you should have burned them. And I know the ladders aren't going to burn, but all the evidence on them is going to burn when you blow up a helicopter full of jet fuel. Moreover, they'd scouted the area where the Bell 206 had landed and spoken to the McDonald's staff and even found some CCTV footage of the mysterious bearded man in the dark suit. All the evidence was funneled toward the office of the public prosecutor, Leif Gortz, working with the RKP, Sweden's National Criminal Investigations Department. The twist is that both Gortz and the RKP had a very clear idea of who was behind the heist. We'll have to step back in time now, so I'll kindly ask our legendary editor, Jen, to insert one of those harp solo sound effects that TV shows use to signal a flashback. Oh my god, yeah. Like, back in the day, like, 90s. And then the screen goes wavy. harp sounds. Back on the 27th of August, the Serbian Foreign Ministry had alerted Swedish authorities that a certain Milan Sevo had been in contact with one Goran Bojovic. Now, these dudes do not sound Swedish. They sound, was it Serbia was getting involved? These guys sound decidedly Serbian. Mr. Servo was a member of the Stockholm Mafia, Sweden's own organized crime unit. It recently relocated to Belgrade, Serbia. Wait, Milan Sevo. Oh, he sounds less Serbian than Goran Bojovic. But I don't know. It sounds kind of Serbian, doesn't it? Like Milan? That sounds, I don't know, whatever. It doesn't matter. While there, he received calls from Mr. Bojovic, a 38-year-old Swede, son of Montenegrin immigrants. Officially, he ran a construction business, but the RKP had long suspected this activity was a mere front for something more illicit. Bojovic had asked Servo for help. He needed logistical support to carry out a major robbery in Stockholm. The Serbian police could not tell when or where exactly the crime would take place, but they did know it would involve the use of a helicopter and the raiding of a large cash repository. The RKP approached public prosecutor Leif Gortz to authorize surveillance on Bojovic. Gortz was expected to coordinate investigations, and they did not appear as a likely candidate. His expertise, in fact, was in money laundering cases. Plus, the idea of a heist via helicopter may have sounded ludicrous to his rational mind, and yet, recent years had proved that robberies in Sweden were frequent and spectacular. You see, the entire population of Sweden in the 2000s was about 9 million people, more or less the same as London. And yet, Swedish heights accounted for a tenth of all robbery losses in Europe. No way, Sweden. What are you up to? This may be due to factors such as centralization and relative vulnerability of the cash distribution systems managed by a handful of private security companies. The relative leniency of sentences as compared to other European countries may also play a part in attracting gangs of internationally sourced, highly professional robbers with military-grade expertise in high-speed driving, infiltration tactics, and explosives. Yeah, that's the problem. So, like, lenient sentences and stuff. I think the model of rehabilitation of prisoners is better, which also goes counter to my idea that I've realized in The Casual Criminalist that I'm actually kind of pro-death penalty, which is fairly intense. People were like, always in the comments on YouTube being like, it's interesting to see the evolution of Simon as he's done this show and he's realized he's okay with the state putting people to death. I'm like, yeah, kind of intense, right? But also, I do believe, like, for, like, non-horrible Pedro Lopez-style crimes, of course we should rehabilitate prisoners. And I think this, like, model of the Nordic countries have has less recidivism and all of this stuff. But the problem is, if there's a dude, and let's say he lives in America, where it's like, if you get, well, not America, let's say, I don't know, China, they'll put robbers to death, right? It's China. And let's say he's really awesome at robbery. And China's not as rich as Sweden. Like, maybe it is these days. China's pretty rich. But let's say, look, there's lots of poor countries where they have horrible punishments for crimes, right? I don't want to name them because then you feel like, you know, you're picking on a country. But let's say, like, there's some random Asian country where there's not a lot of money and they'll basically put you to death for looking sideways at the government or something like that, right? But you happen to be an excellent bank robber in that country. Of course, just go to Sweden, where there's more money. It's going to be easier. Maybe it won't be easier. No, it'll be easier because there's probably less people with guns around. And also, if they catch you, you're going to get less time in prison. And prison is not going to be like Bangkok Hilton, where, I don't know, I've seen that Locked Up Abroad show. You don't want to go to foreign prison in Asia. But in Sweden, they're like, ah, yes, you can have a computer in your cell, no problem. I don't know what a Swedish accent is, so I just made it up. Sorry, that was a massive tangent. But, you know, look, we can put that on the rules, can't we? The Casual Criminalist rules. If you're an excellent bank robber in a country which punishes bank robbery heavily, just go to a country with more money and less punishment. You're welcome. Today's episode of the show is brought to you by Stitch Fix. Guys, you know, shopping for new clothes, it's time-consuming, it's stressful. God damn, I go to the store. Is that all right? I just need a simple shirt. Oh, I don't really like this fabric. Oh, it doesn't really fit very well. Oh, this just looks too weird on me. I can't pull this off. You know, this is my vibe when I go to when I go clothes shopping, and I just don't like it. Is that just because I'm a man? My wife doesn't seem to have these problems. Why not let Stitch Fix do all the work for you, though, so you can spend more time doing the things you love? Look, when it comes to looking good, Stitch Fix has you covered. You can say goodbye to endless browsing and hello to fresh picks curated for your size and for your taste. They say shopping for clothes can be daunting. I always say that shopping for clothes can be tear my hair out frustrating if I had any hair, which I don't. So, or maybe that's what happened to my hair. I was clothes shopping without Stitch Fix and I tore it all out. Just joking, it's genetic. So with Stitch Fix, all you got to do, go online, make a Stitch Fix style profile. You answer a few questions about what you like to wear and what you don't and what sort of new styles you're open to trying. And then Stitch Fix's experts, they go to work, they find items exclusively for you. And each piece is hand-picked, so it's unique for your size, style, and your budget, making it the best way to discover clothes and make you feel your best. Stitch Fix will then send you 5 pieces to try on at home. You keep what you like and you send back what you don't. Easy. Shipping, returns, exchanges, is all free and easy. So sign up with Stitch Fix and get the season's latest pieces for women, men, and kids. Stitchfix.com/casual will get you $20 off your first purchase. That's Stitchfix.com/casual to get $20 off your first purchase. That's a limited time offer, by the way, and purchase within 2 days of signing up. And now, back to today's episode. Thank you, Stitch Fix.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
So detectives at RKP now had a golden opportunity to bust a gang before the robbery was committed, but Gord supplied the brakes. Sure, they could arrest Boyovitz and his associates based on the wiretapping, and yes, they could charge them with conspiracy to commit a crime, but there was no certainty that such charges would result in a conviction. Gortz and the RKP investigators agreed to continue surveillance on Boyovitz and associates until they decided to make a move, and then they would catch them in the act. Boyovitz kept in touch with Servo, asking him for help in hiring a Serbian pilot for a project. Servo's initial hire, however, seemed to back out from the project. Boyovitz even considered taking flying lessons himself. The RKP intensified surveillance on Boyovitz. On the 2nd of September, undercover police officer Annika Persson followed him to a small island off mainland Stockholm, posing as a dog walker. She was able to witness a meeting between Boyovitz and two associates. I feel like posing as the dog walker is about as subtle as the guy reading the giant broadsheet newspaper with two eye holes cut in it. And before you ask, Annika had taken along her small schnauzer to give credibility to the disguise. Well, it wouldn't be very credible if you're walking an imaginary dog. Sure, one may still pose as a dog walker without a dog. Just wander around with a broken leash, a bag full of poop, and a confused look on your face. Big question, where are you getting that poop from? Are you in that bag before you're going on your little mission? But Persson was a pro. She recognized one of the associates at the meeting, Sharbal Sharo, a first-generation Swede with dual Syrian citizenship. Sharo worked as a PE teacher in southern Stockholm, but had a criminal record. However, Annika had never seen the third guy, a bearded man, and so she decided to follow him. She trailed him all the way back to Stockholm, then handed over surveillance to a colleague. The officer followed Mr. Beardo McBeardface to an office building where he lost him. Luckily, he was able to note down his car's registration number. 1 week later, Boyovitz rung Sebo and told him that he had found a pilot and that the heist was imminent. Was McBeardface the pilot, and when and where would the robbery take? Based on hints picked up from earlier conversation, Gortz and the RKP detectives identified a likely candidate for the place and time. The Stockholm Arlanda Airport. On Thursday, the 17th of September, back in 2002, three robbers disguised as a maintenance crew walked onto Arlanda's runway, whipped out their assault rifles and held up a plane just landed from London. They left behind a decoy bomb to delay the police and sped away with $7 million in cash. Oh my lord, what was going on that plane? That's an insane amount of money to be carrying. But this time, RKP would catch Boyovitz and gang red-handed. They put on high alert, their SWAT teams and helicopter crews are ready for the 17th, which came and went, but nothing happened. The RKP held their breath for a few days until that Bell 206 landed on a building in Varsberger. Gortz on the hunt. Gortz and colleagues had not been able to catch the gang in the act, but they could still chase after them. Priority was to scan again the transcripts of Boyovitz's mobile traffic. The morning of the heist, at 8:13 a.m., the alleged ringleader received a very short message from his friend in Belgrade, Mr. Sever. The message read, :O. In other words, it's like a surprised face. In other words, that was totally amazeballs, mate. Oh, it's like, you know, like amazed, surprised, like, To monitor suspicious phone traffic and to trace the movements of the robbers, the RKP could rely on the expertise of Jonas Hiddleby, a geographic profiler. Hiddleby and his analysts trawled through 300,000 phone calls taking place in the days leading up to the heist, looking for patterns and clues that could lead to their whereabouts. Oh my god, these guys are making a lot of phone calls. Also, nowadays, when you do like text messages, they're encrypted, aren't they? So people can't read them even if they want to. Or is that just what they tell people? It's like, yeah. Facebook says WhatsApp is encrypted end-to-end or whatever. It's like, yeah. But it's not. Because, I mean, it probably is. But it'd be interesting if they just lied about that so that the police could catch more criminals. Interesting and terribly unethical. He was looking for something very specific, a closed circuit. In simple terms, organized criminal gangs are smart enough to use only prepaid phones to make their calls. Users don't need to sign contracts to purchase these phones, which are supposedly untraceable and can be disposed of after use. Now, very well organized criminal gangs will make sure that they use such phones not only to make calls, but also to receive them. Wait.
These guys got burner phones, and then they were accidentally calling phones that were not part of their like little burner phone circle? That is insane. And you can't use your burner phone to call your mum to wish a happy birthday. That's insane, because then that burner phone is useless because it's linked to your mum, isn't it? Really? You plan this with the fake bombs and you don't know this? Really?
I'm sorry.
That would generate a closed loop of prepaid phone numbers communicating only to each other. Exactly, but this type of pro move is exactly what sly foxes like Hildeby are looking for. Wait, what? Then you've just got a closed loop of burner phones. And sure, they're going to know they're all talking to each other, but that's all they can know. The profiler and team eventually identified a closed circuit of 14 disposable phones that'd be used in the weeks before the chopper raid and had fallen silent the morning of the 23rd of September. Okay, what are you going to do with this information, though? Each call from the 14 phones had been routed through a particular cell tower. By analysing the call's history, Hildeby was able to put together a timeline and map the raid's events, from the planting of fake bombs at the police hangar to the escape via speedboat. Hildeby's work had been a massive leap forward in the investigations, but Gortz and the RKP only had the name of a suspect, Boyevitz, and no one else in custody yet. Wait, so what's the advantage? He's found these phones. It's like, so what? You can't prove who those phones are owned by because they're burner phones. And I'm sure they destroyed the phones. At least, fingers crossed, they destroyed the phones. What? What's... This doesn't seem useful. Where to focus next? Or rather, on whom to focus? The answer was obvious. The most visible, most skilled element of the gang, the helicopter pilot. Elusive Mr. Chopper. The RKP detectives cross-referenced the list of Swedish helicopter license holders with pilots who had used the hangar in Nortalgia. They then scanned the resulting shortlist, looking for any significant detail, and the officers did notice something interesting. One of the licensers listed a home address in the town of Ljusterö. Where had they seen this address before? They went back to the report of the 2nd of September. Remember when Officer Annika and a schnauzer had eavesdropped on the meeting between Boyevitz and the bearded guy? The unnamed guy had driven away in a Peugeot, and its license plate was registered to an address in Ljusterö, the same address. And whose license was it? It belonged to a TV producer called Alexander Eriksson. Uh-oh. Yeah, this doesn't seem like... I mean, it's a criminal mistake, but it's like... You thought you didn't know you were being followed, so you drove your own car to this meeting and they tied it together. That is not criminals being stupid. That is just straight good police work. You may remember his name. Well, you should, since I asked you to put so many pins in that guy that he may as well be a voodoo doll. Yeah, it's the cocaine dude, Malaysia cocaine dude. Now that Gords and the RKP had two named suspects, they decided it was time for some action. On the 27th and 28th of September, they arrested both Boyevitz and Eriksson, the latter just when he was about to board a flight to the Canary Islands. Boyevitz laughed off the allegations, simply asking for a lawyer. Eriksson was no more cooperative. We could paraphrase his answers to questioning as the following. Mr. Boyevitz, who... Never heard of him. Never met him. And me? Piloting helicopter for ice? Impossible. In the early hours of the 23rd, I'd relapsed into my old drug habits. And I even had a collision with a Toyota while driving my Audi. I have timestamp photos to prove it. It's pretty good, isn't it? Like, how do you know you were not in the helicopter doing this robbery? Oh, because I was high on cocaine and I crashed. Lesser crime. When detectives pointed out that had been seen at McDonald's in Derby, he admitted that he'd driven there after some early morning partying. Beyond that, Gortz could not extract further info from the pair. The Swedish laws prevented him from offering more lenient sentences or immunity in exchange for a confession. But another breakthrough would come from cooperation between patrol officers and the geographic profiler, Jonas Hildeby. On the 27th of September, Charbel Sharrow, right-hand man to Goyevitz, had been stopped for a routine check. The uniformed officers noted a receipt from a phone shop in his car, took a photo, and attached it to their report. Ah, no! You've broken the burner phone thing! Ah, dude! Why? Don't get the receipt, or get the receipt and burn it, or throw it in the trash somewhere. No, just burn it. I know it seems extremely unlikely that the police are going to go through all of the trash bins near to the phone shop where you bought this, but just in case, burn it. Why not? Burning is such a good tool for criminals. If you're unsure, burn, burn, burn. The receipt listed the purchase of 5 prepaid cell phones and 5 SIM cards. No, you buy the burner phones at different shops with cash. That's how everyone knows this. If you've watched like 3 episodes of Breaking Bad, you know this. Come on. Hilderby compared the 5 mobile phone numbers to those of the closed-circuited it identified, and bingo, one of them in use during the heist. The RKP had found a third named suspect. In early October, forensic analysis provided yet more names. Remember the guy who had dropped the fake bombs at the police helicopter base? He had set his tools and gloves on fire, or so he thought. A fire brigade had put out the bonfire on time for DNA to be retrieved. Come on. Guys, you gotta burn, not just burn, burn properly. Use kerosene. Carry a barbecue lighter fluid with you and throw it all on there. And then when you're done, throw the whole bottle on there because you don't need it anymore. And also it will add accelerant to the fire. Brilliant. And more DNA was recovered from rubber bands inside the bombs used during the heist. Why are you touching those? If you're making a bomb, a fake bomb for a heist, do it with gloves on. Come on. Come on, you know better. Database searches revealed the names of Nemanja Alec and Mikhail Sodogran, a friend of Charo's. Next, CSI Stockholm analyzed the drops of blood found on the ladder at the G4S depot, which gave the name of an old acquaintance of the police. He was a Swede national of Iraqi origin called Safar Karim. In 2000, his crew had stormed the Swedish National Museum, stolen 2 Renoirs and a Rembrandt, and escaped via speedboat. Police cars had been stumped by, guess what, chains and caltrops. Kadam had managed to leave the country after the helicopter heist, but justice eventually caught up. In January 2010, he was arrested in the Dominican Republic and then extradited to Sweden. The march of justice proceeded inexorably. Look, dude, I'm assuming if you're Iraqi and you fled to, like, you're not just going on holiday to the Dominican Republic, are you? So why the fuck aren't you in a country that doesn't extradite to Sweden? I started off being quite impressed with these criminals. And I think, at least from what Arnaldo told me, people were like more impressed with the criminals and not impressed with the police. And on this one, I'm like, holy shit. I'm impressed, super impressed with the police. And I've gradually become like, these criminals are kind of idiots, aren't they? Not too bad of a payday. By summer of 2010, Gortz and the RKP had charged 10 suspects. They had even unveiled Ericsson's little trick. The collision with the Toyota had been staged, another accomplice had been driving his Audi. Why? Why are you getting this other guy involved? Oh, because you're not actually there, of course, are you? The trial began in early August and went on for 6 weeks. The prosecutors proved how every time Boyovitz and Charo had used their work prepaid phones, the signals were just centimeters away from their private mobiles. Whoa! Whoa! I didn't know that they could do that. That's crazy. I assume they'd have to make calls like together or something. That's really impressive. Wow. Watch out, criminals. Zengors used the transcripts of Boyovic's conversations with his Serbian contact, Mr. Servo, which revolved around the search for a pilot. Boyovic, clearly a true master in handling bovine manure, replied that he and Servo had been talking about a construction project. Boyovic wanted to hire a crane operator, and one of the candidates happened to be a dead ringer for Maverick, Tom Cruise's character in Top Gun, hence he referred to him as the pilot. This is quite clever. Does he actually look anything like Tom Cruise, though? Mr. Ericsson, the actual pilot, also put up a good defense. He came from a well-off background and had a steady job. Jury had a history of drug abuse, but he didn't have a criminal record nor clear motivations to participate in such a felony. He's like a gentleman robber. He's like, no, I'm wealthy. I just like it for the thrill. His defense was conducted by star attorney Leif Silbersky, who had once represented Julian Assange. Silbersky argued that Ericsson wasn't a good enough pilot to pull such stunts. Plus, that night he had relapsed on old habits. He had been on a drug binge, which concluded with a severe case of the munchies, the McDonald's in Tardy. But Gortz was one step ahead. The forensics team had found Ericsson's DNA on the GPS device and some of the zip ties found near the chopper. And again, fire is your friend, guys. Why didn't you burn the helicopter with all of inside? Moreover, Annika Persson, the dog-walking cop, testified that Ericsson had met with Boyovitz and Charo on the 2nd of September. In early November, the court issued its verdict. You guys are guilty. No way about it. The two accomplices who had staged the traffic accident were sentenced to less than 2 years each. The explosive expert, Sodogran, received 5 years. Safar Karim, the once art thief, received 7 years for storming the depot armed with a Kalashnikov. And then Alexander Ericsson, 7 years for stealing and piloting the Bell's 206, Boyovitz and Charo, 3 to 5 years respectively for planning the heist. These are fairly hefty sentences, though, considering that no one really was threatened with violence. I mean, the guys in the security depot could have been scared, but they weren't directly threatened. These are pretty heavy sentences, I must say. Gortz pressed for more serious sentences, but his team could not prove the two had physically raided the G4S building. Finally, Nemanja, Alec, accused of placing the fake bombs at Matinj, got away scot-free. His lawyer successfully contested the DNA evidence by claiming that he had loaned the gloves to someone else.
Wow.
On the 16th of February 2011, an appeals court in Stockholm revised these verdicts without significant changes. Eriksson and Kadun had their prison terms increased by a year, but the other sentences remained the same. That's the risk of appealing. It's like, I want to appeal. It's like, you know, I can make it worse, right? Wait, really? All of the loot of 39 million krona, almost 8.7 million US dollars in today's value. Gone. Disappeared into thin air, flown into the atmosphere like a manically revving chopper, possibly laundered into a front business or reinvested in the drug trade. Gort suspected that the gang included from 10 to 20 members. Let's go for 14 based on the number of prepaid phones, and let's assume they split the bounty into equal shares, even though some had more active role than others. That's more than $620,000 per member, USD. That's not worth going to prison for 7 years for, is it though? Not a bad payday considering that the planning and execution took barely 2 months.
Yeah, except you're paying for it afterwards, aren't you?
I can understand how this may have sounded as an enticing proposition for a non-career criminal like Alex Eriksson. Could such a loot tempt a law-abiding dad into giving away his life of frustrating furniture and Lego-inflicted pain? Well, any gang leader who's interested in new hires is welcome to contact me. I can offer a valid driver's license and mild proficiency with PowerPoint and Excel. But in hindsight, careful Arnaldo, you writing down your crimes. But in hindsight, even a 3-year prison sentence would be too much time spent away from those I assemble those Billy bookcases for. Oh, and Arnaldo's included an image of his Billy bookcase. Oh, that's really sweet. I'll give it another go, though, after the kids have gone off to college. End of main story. That's really sweet. I like this one. There's no murder. Dismembered appendices. Dear Simon, I must confess that for this piece, I don't have any. As I've already filled into the main script all that could be said of the heists of heists. I will only reiterate my surprise at finding out how prolific the world of intricate robberies in Sweden, a country seldom associated with flamboyant crimes, is. I can also add that the story has been considered for a Netflix adaptation since 2018 with Jake Gyllenhaal in the role. But it's yet to appear on our screens. This would be great. Come on. Finally, I would like to use this space to test my psychic capabilities. In a previous episode, I touched upon the CIA's experiments with psychic capabilities, the infamous Stargate Project. Inspired by this experience, I have projected my astral body to predict what tangents and rants you may have gone on while reading this script. Oh no, he's going to nail them, isn't he? I can tell. Oh, okay, I'm going to enjoy this, though. Here's a list. I'll invite you and the listeners to confirm how many of these I accurately predicted. Number one, a tangent about IKEA, including a personal story of wasted hours during a weekend to select the perfect bookshelf or a plant holder for Peter. Peter is my plant pot that I have on a set for another studio show I do. Well, you got the IKEA bit right, but not about selecting perfect bookshelves, but about the assembly. I'll give you half a point. Amusing about security guards and why do they commit to such a dangerous job? Again, I'll give you half a point because we definitely had tons of asides about security guards. An aside about personal frustrations with Lego. Again, I'll give you half a point because it was Duplo Arnaldo. Amazement at how prolific Swedish robbers appear to be. Yeah, nailed that one. That one was crazy. Full point. An anecdote about taking flying lessons, including pros and cons of light planes versus helicopters. No, because I haven't been taking my flying lessons because I took the flying lessons, like, I generally, like, once a year, twice a year, I'll get very frustrated with work, and I'll be like, I can't do it anymore, I just want to quit, I'm done, like, I don't want to do this anymore, and it usually lasts for about a week, and I'm just like, I just don't really go to work, I go into work, like, half a day, I don't really try, and then about 2 weeks later, I'm, like, pretty, like, what was wrong with me? I'm back at work, enjoying it, times are good. And during those weeks, I tend to be like, I should do something nice for myself. And normally that involves like going on a little trip, going to the movies. And I was like, no, I'm going to sign up for pilot lessons, which I've always wanted to do and still want to do. And basically I did that. And then I realized, good Lord, with two small children and look, I have a pretty heavy job. I mean, I have the lightest job in the world, but I tend to need to work quite a lot because I make quite a lot of videos. It hasn't really been possible. I haven't had a flying lesson in 6 months, unfortunately. Number six, dismay at how difficult Swedish names are to pronounce. No, I'll give you half a point for that because I just gave up. Number seven, a nostalgic revelry about old prepaid mobile phones. No, we didn't have that. We didn't have that one. I don't really have any nostalgia for prepaid mobile phones. They were a pain in the scratching these things to, like, put in a number. Number 8, surprised at the competence of the police work, or with or without the use of the epithet legends. Yeah, I probably did call the police legends, didn't I? We'll give you a point for that one. Number 9, a good chuckle about the ship naming competition won by Boaty McBoatface. No, I just chuckled at it because I got the joke and I didn't explain the joke. Half a point or 0 points? I don't know. Number 10, more rules to add to the list of how to not commit crimes. I can venture a few. Letter A, assume you're always being wiretapped. No, but we definitely had lots of crimes, lots of rules being added. B, conduct your meeting somewhere private. Number C, don't trust prepaid phones. D, always wear gloves from preparation to execution. Well, you got D. There was always wear gloves. I didn't say don't trust prepaid phones, but now about them being close to your main phone, don't trust prepaid phones. Good Lord. Number 11, a rant about the idiocy of using state funds to train psychic secret agents. Nah, we didn't get that. Please confirm if I've guessed more than 5. In that case, I may seriously consider another line of work. I reckon with all the half points, you definitely added up to 5, Arnaldo. Perhaps I may offer my services to Mr. Gortz and the RKB, should they have a face, should they have to face an even more competent gang, one perhaps that has learned some lessons from this show. One last point before I clock off. I'd like to shout out a regular viewer of The Casual Criminalist, as well as some other channels within the Whistlerverse. Someone called Ignition FR, regularly and painstaking. Oh, I know this guy! This is the guy who always does the, like, chapter headings. He's always like, you know, 3 minutes in, and he's like, dismembered appendices, or like 30 minutes in, he's like, dismembered appendices, all of these, all the way through. I don't know how he does it every video. Good Lord, man. Thank you. Allowing other viewers to revisit their favorite bits. Dear friends, thank you for your dedication. If you join the first letters of this episode's heading together, you'll find an apt epithet to describe you. Note to Simon, here's a recap of the chapter headings, just in case. Looters from the skies enter the police. Gorts. Ah, it spells legends. Legends. This has been an episode of Casual Criminalist. Thank you so much for watching or listening. If you're on a podcast, leave a review, leave a like, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. Hey, and also, these heist episodes never get as many views, and I really like doing them. So how about you share this with a friend and be like, go watch this. Get those view counts up. Because I know if you're here at the end, you really liked them. Share this podcast with a friend. It's like the least organic way of getting, generally, I get most of my views just because YouTube algorithm decides to show videos. But hey, telling a friend can't hurt. Thank you so much. I'll see you next time.
For nearly 4 decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.